Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pregnant Arnold Schwarzenegger's like flanking him.
With Danny DeVito's baby, of course.
Danny DeVito's the gene seed.
Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, The Lore Boys. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, joined today by James Miller and Peter O'Donohue. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Oh, fuck, he took it from me. That'll be our BuzzFeed show. We're the hi guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll cheat on my wife. And then
God. I was nervous. I was gonna have to get to cheat on my wife.
No, don't worry. And I'm not getting married anytime soon, so that's we just can just put that off forever.
Well, you better speed it up because we're gonna want the scandal. Think about how many clicks they got.
Fair enough, yeah.
Come on, dude. Don't be selfish. Cheat on your wife. Get a wife.
I'll go to the bar tonight.
Selfish bastard. So today we're taking a look at the Chaos Primarchs from the Warhammer 40K universe. Specifically, we're talking about one. I guess I should say I'm going to be starting some episodes, I guess, on the Chaos Primarchs. Today we're going to be talking about Mortarion, head of the Death Guard.
Yes, I've seen this toy. He looks very fucking cool.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. The Chaos Primarchs have been kind of requested in the past by patrons, Darkside Bunny, Magnus the Pink, renamed from Magnus the Red, who is one of the Chaos Primarchs, not the one we're going to be talking about today. We'll talk about him a bit today, but maybe the one I'll be talking about next.
He's like Magnusy or something.
Is he right now?
Or he was at some point.
It was Magnus the Poor for a bit.
Thank you. Thank you, Magnusy the Poor. Buddy. That's very good. this was also requested by friend of the show Bobby, but a different friend of the show Bobby. A good friend of mine who listens to the show requested this. So shout out to Bobby.
He listens?
Yep.
No way.
Yeah, so does Tyler. I was telling him stories. He's like, I know, I listened to your show. I was like,
oh, no. All right.
Well, hi, Skylar. Cool. So let's jump right in. I guess shout out Terry for the updated pledge in Patreon.
He's a friend of the show, too, but met through
the show. Also friend of the show. Yeah, friend of the show through the show. Like all of you guys listening.
We have a fresh patron, actually, Noah Head, who I think has requested stuff in the past, but was not officially a patron until
recently. Don't make the obvious joke, guys.
Okay, Road Ahead was in my head.
I thought we were going to do like the Halloween guy, you know, without the head thing.
Yeah, I was thinking like Mario as Rumpelstiltskin. Like, I got the Noah Head!
Road Ahead. That's what $3 gets you. We will make fun of your name.
Yeah. Sorry. I just didn't scroll down far enough in Patreon. But it also looks like Forshi
up to sub, I think.
Also up to him.
Yeah. Up to sub. And thank you for the game, Forshi, too. He says he's upping his sub and he bought me a game the same day. So lots of support from him.
And cashing that dollar general check, baby.
Yep. Thank you. Okay, so you guys want to jump right in? You guys remember Warhammer 40K, right? We've talked about it before.
Sure does. Also relevant because Boltgun just came out and it's supposed to be great.
I mean, yeah, there's a million 40K games out all the time. I just bought one while we were recording the bonus content for 40K. I just like it came up on Steam when I was looking up Jamie's games. It's called Inquisitor Martyr.
And it's on sale, right?
It's like the complete edition, which is normally $103. It's $20 bucks. It's 80%
Inquisitor
off.
Inquisitor Martyr? Is that like Sergeant Major? Like what?
So it's Warhammer 40K Inquisitor. It gave me two Warhammer 40K Inquisitor games. Oh. Like, it gave me Inquisitor Martyr, and it gave me Inquisitor something else. Inquisitor Prophecy. But it's like, it's a Diablo clone. So it's
an ARG. What's the one you kill the peoples instead of the rats now?
Vermin. Darktide?
Darktide. That one looks good. I watched other Bobby friend of the show play it.
Yeah, so you're fighting in Darktide. I'm fairly certain. I haven't really. I've seen like 20 minutes of gameplay, maybe. But you're playing or you're fighting against the forces of chaos, who we're going to be talking about. Cool. Inquisitor looks cool, Jamie. I'd say check it out. I've had a Diablo itch recently, so I was like, oh, rather than go Blizzard my money, I can give Checks Notes the great company Games Workshop money. But
yeah. I still have Grim Dawn. Grim Dawn, which I only like chipped at the surface. I feel like if I wanted to come back to it, I'd go to Grim Dawn or D2. But
okay, I played the first like 20 minutes of Grim Dawn. I was like, eh, not for me. I bounced off the same way that I bounced off of Path of Exile. And like in that, maybe it's just like the motif, like the setting, the whatever. Like it's too similar to Diablo, where like. And I was talking with a friend about Diablo 4 yesterday, and I was like, if I get the itch, I'm just going to go back and play Diablo 2 like I've been doing for the last 25 years. Like that's not going to suddenly change. So like
Diablo 2 is like newer than it's ever been too. Now it's got like terror zones and like the end game farming is not as tedious as it used to be. And
yeah, I'm going to I would buy I'll buy D2R if it goes on sale, maybe. But I just bought Warhammer 40K Inquisitor because it went on sale. So maybe I'll play that for a bit.
Yeah. I'm looking at how much is it? I'm like, maybe it's worth it just to play it with you. Okay. Tell me if you like it. Tell me if you like it. Then we'll go from there. Yeah.
Cool. It's on sale till June. Till June 12th.
Cool.
So we could probably talk about what we're here to talk about, which is Warhammer 40K, to be fair. So we're not totally off the rails already.
Just pussyfooting around it a little bit.
Yeah.
So we've done a few stories on the Space Marine Primarchs on this show. But mainly we've talked about those who remained loyal to the Emperor after the events of the Horus Heresy. Today, we're going to be talking about those who left the Emperor's good graces, or one of those who left the Emperor's good graces, alongside the Luna Wolf's Primarchs, Horus Lupercal.
Okay.
So we've done an episode on the Horus Heresy way back in the day. Did we do three?
Or maybe not. I was gone. I remember listening. It was with you, Murphy, and Pete.
I was going to say, I remember one of you not being there, but I couldn't remember.
I was in Poland. It was 2018.
Yeah. It was 2018. I did look it up. I was looking up what I have written here is we've done an episode on the Horus Heresy back in the day. A lot has changed in that time because there's been like new books released in the Horus Heresy, Black Library edition, you know.
I remember listening to that one because I missed you guys and I was all alone in Europe.
Yeah. Cute. There's new books in the series. There's more details on like the Traitor Legions. There's new character perspectives, and there's like the Siege of Terra. I think just recently, in like the most recent book or one of the more recent books, happened where like Horus finally does confront the God Emperor in his at his Golden Throne, essentially.
Whoa!
It's a story for another time. I actually would really love to just redo those episodes. So if you want to hear that tale, join the Lore Boys Discord server and pop it into the Lore Request channel. And there's links in the description. This episode. So the Horus Heresy, we're going to talk a bit about the Horus Heresy just in like framing, I guess, everything. Then I'll introduce you guys to the list of the traitor primarchs that we know of. And then we'll talk about Mortarion and his kind of origin story.
They're traitors like Joe.
The new talking about there being a million Warhammer games, like there's the beta just came out for Rogue Trader, which is like they're like the Imperium's like privateer. Fact, like they're like privateers in space, and that they're legalized piracy essentially, where they can like they're allowed to steal from people if it serves the Empire in a certain way or something like that.
Cool.
But that game looks really cool. It's by the makers of Divinity: Original Sin. Or is it by? No, it's not by Larian. Sorry, it's by Owlcat, who made Pathfinder: Wrath of the Righteous and Pathfinder: Kingmaker. But same style of game, I guess, as Divinity: Original Sin. So, David in the Discord was playing the beta, and he said it looks really cool. I'm definitely going to get that one when it comes out, most likely. So the Horus Heresy takes place in the 31st millennium. You guys will be like, but this is Warhammer 40K, not 31K.
That's exactly what I was saying. It'd be 32K, wouldn't it? Oh, no, 31K, sorry. I was like, 31,000. No, that's the 32nd millennium, but I'm an idiot. So
31st millennium is what I said. So during the Great Crusade led by the Emperor of Mankind is when the Horus Heresy kind of kicks off. The Emperor, aided by his genetically engineered superhuman sons, known as the Primarchs, sought to reunite the scattered human colonies and establish a galaxy-spanning empire called the Imperium of Man. Now, you guys will maybe remember between like 20,000 and 30,000, it was a time known as the Dark Ages, where humanity had been spreading throughout the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, for you know, 20,000 years or so.
But then comms went dead.
Yeah, exactly. There was
nobody could talk to each other.
A warp storm swept through the galaxy and just destroyed like technology and like basically set up a bunch of different worlds to have like different unique like levels of technology and everything like that, right?
Right.
Yeah, we've done a bunch of episodes on different Primarchs. Like Gulliman, and that's the only name I can remember at the moment. And that's Space Wolves guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. We've done a few episodes. We did like the Salamanders guy. We've done, right. Yeah.
It's been a while since our last 40K. That used to be your bread and butter, but yeah, now we hit MTG for a while. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I get fixated. It's the ADHD in me, I guess. I like the one topic and I like to stick with it. So maybe we'll be sticking with this one for a while because I got a little jazz doing this episode. So it's like wearing an old glove or something. I don't know. It's got to be an expression, right?
Old mecha suit.
It's like putting on an old condom, you know, just fits you. So the Primarchs, created in the late 30th millennium, now commanded the mighty Space Marine Legion's genetically enhanced warriors, who were the Imperium's greatest champions. Following their creation by the Emperor of Mankind during the Great Crusade, the infant Primarchs were scattered across the galaxy by mysterious forces. Each Primarch landed on a different planet, encountering diverse cultures and societies that would mold their characters and shape their legions.
Right, and each Primarch has the dad who is the king.
The God Emperor. He created the Monterra in a lab by creating like he created something called the gene seed, which is like a piece of his immortality, like his immortal soul that he imparted into each of them. And then
I remember saying God come whenever he said that.
We've talked a lot about God come in this podcast. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And then they're all scattered about.
By the ruinous powers, so the forces of chaos that live in the warp, the four chaos gods. There's also this idea of chaos united, which is just like worshiping kind of all of them at the same time, and like if you worship chaos united, you probably believe that they're all one god, just different like avatars or perceptions of that one god. These like Nurgle, Tsiinch, Khorne, and Slaanesh.
Khorne was the one I couldn't remember. I was like trying to run through them.
Blood
in my
for the
head.
Blood
was,
God.
Yeah, I couldn't remember it at all.
These are no different. They all had the same backstory. They all the 20 that we know of, and like when I say know of, some of them we don't really have any information on and never really got to meet, but we know that they've existed. We're all on the Emperor's side at the beginning until the Horus Heresy occurs, and then some of them change sides at various rates.
And the Horus Heresy, is that a specific event again? I'm forgetting what happened. Yeah.
So Horus Lupercal, the Primarch for the Luna Wolves, essentially declares the civil war on the God Emperor. So he says he's no longer fit to lead. It's just a civil war. And then the ones who followed Horus, the traitors, all end up siding with the forces of chaos against the Imperium, essentially. So they're entirely all corrupted by the ruinous powers.
Got it. The Avengers invented the Civil Wars.
Yes, they did.
I thought you're wow. You never even seen the movie. You're really smart. So the first of those to be truly corrupted by the ruinous powers was Horus Lupercal, who was bestie of the Emperor and War Master of the Imperium at the time.
But hurt so bad.
Yeah, I have a quote for you guys. I think. Later on that will show just how much the Emperor trusted Horus whenever he betrayed him. Those the chaos gods managed to corrupt alongside Horus are, in no particular order, Mortarion, who we're going to talk about today, the Primarch of the Death Guard Legion, Magnus the Red, the Primarch of the Thousand Suns Legion, Fulgrim, the Primarch of the Emperor's Children Legion, Angron, Primarch of the World Eaters Legion, Lorgar Aurelian, Primarch of the Word Bearers Legion, Perturabo, Primarch of the Iron Warriors Legion, Conrad Kurz, who's Primarch of the Night Lords Legion, and maybe Alpharius Omegon, Primarchs of the dual Primarchs of the Alpha Legion. Alpharius and Omegon, we don't really know. They're like super secretive and like very espionage-esque. Their true allegiance is like kind of uncertain.
I love that that quote from the Bible. It always inspires me. I am the Alpharion and the Omegon.
I'd much rather be a part of the World Eaters than the Bearer of Children or
Emperor's Children. There's the Word Bearers. There's the Iron Warriors, Night Lords, Alpha Legion, Oh, dude, Alpha Legion, bro. You fucking hang out in a Romanian prison? Hell yeah.
We did an episode about the word bearers. I know, like, people are always like, hey, we want some female space marines. They could be the child bearers. I'm sure the Games Workshop is great with their PR, right?
Yeah. The Thousand Suns one would suck because you'd get, like, no attention, right? You'd be neglected.
Yeah. And that, honestly, as a redhead, sounds awful. Thousand Suns. You know how much SPF I would need?
This Magnus the Red, he's just severely sunburned.
Yeah. I mean, he is. I got a picture of Magnus the Red to share with you guys. I can share it now, but he's very red. He's fully red skinned. So
He's got elephant tusks poking out of his chest too, which is a interesting armor choice.
He's like me for
nipples.
Real. For
Those
real.
Are actually his nipples. It's like not. It's not on his armor. It's like his armor is specially made to have like the two holes for his elephant tusk nipples.
Okay, yeah. What's the cup size, do you think, when he's like shopping?
Well, he's probably like 170 feet tall, so yeah. Pretty big cup size, I'm going to guess.
It's more like a sock size. They're really... You know what? This guy, he probably sleeps comfortably on his side because you have three
back
stands. Yeah. I guess, yeah, you, back would be good.
Yeah, because if you're going to sleep on your side, like... I feel like the wings would get in the way, right? Like, do you curl the wing? I would say you curl the wing under you because that'd be comfy, but then the wing's going to fall asleep, right?
He just He sleeps on a 110-foot inversion table with holes for his wings. Yeah.
That is obviously a picture. I was going to share it later because that's obviously a picture of Magnus after he succumbs to the ruinous powers and turns traitor against the Emperor. That's not him. Right, his traditional Primarch-looking self. The Primarchs you guys will maybe remember are like 12-foot-tall superhumans capable of superhuman feats of strength and endurance and generally much, much... They live for millennia at a time. The God come did it to him.
Was there one that we listened to about like a guy who's out in the woods and they're like, okay, we have to go hunt the biggest thing?
Yeah, there was. Now, when you say what we listened to, do you mean, was there one that I told you guys about?
That Jamie and I listened to.
I don't think we communally listened to one, the three of us.
Oh, sorry, when I say we, I meant the not royal we, just me and Peter. Yeah.
I'm going to put my foot in my mouth. I think that's the either Lorgar, who I think we've talked about from
the
Horde,
like,
or
the
Space Wolves one.
They fall into a cliff and they're like back to back,
Uzko and Pacha.
Exactly. Yeah. And they had to get themselves out of the cliff or something, but one would like let the other fall and they weren't sure.
I love how Pete laughed at that joke that we've already done on another episode.
It's been a while.
What was it called? It was Lorgar? Okay.
I think it was Lemon Russ, not Lorgar, because Lorgar is one of the Chaos Primarchs. I saw not his name, and I was like, I'm pretty sure we've done him, but I was thinking of Lemon Russ, because he's the one, the picture of him, we have him on our merch store, him with like no shirt lounging on a throne, I think, is Lemon Russ.
Right.
I might be mistaken, though. I'm probably putting my foot in my mouth. I didn't research our old episodes. So, when the Primarchs were scattered across the galaxy, a young seedling named Mortarion found himself washed ashore on the choking, toxic gas-covered planet with steam engine-level technology known as Barnabas. Great name for a planet.
Yeah.
Like all the other hostile planets that the infant Primarchs found themselves stranded on, Barnabas was an unforgiving place. Not only the clouds of chlorine gas, nor the acid rain, we also had a pretty intense class divide. So take a drink.
Oh, no.
Take a drink, because Ethan's talking about class divide again.
It's so much worse to be poor with the acid rain.
Right? I mean, you joke, but like climate change on Earth is going to affect the poor primarily, right? Like first and foremost.
Oh, yeah.
Like Elon Musk with his, whatever, 12 private jet flights a day is not going to be impacted by climate change.
Yeah, or a regular guy like me with an air conditioner is just like, yeah, it's probably hot out. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I got an idea when I was drinking. It got caught in my mustache and the drink started to trickle down. So
trickle down acid rain.
Ronald Reagan punches out of the glass of his like entombed display case, like Lennon in The Simpsons. So the pre-industrial population of Barnabas was split into two groups, those who have and those who have not. And of course, we're talking about having fantastical warp-derived psychic powers of necromancy and having not those psychic powers.
That is the worst class divide. That is actually politically the one that I care about the most.
I mean, yeah, so they're not humans, these necromancers. They're not really described in any way, but they're just kind of mentioned as like Oh, they're necromantic beings who are not not human, essentially. Okay. And they're so the necromancer class, as described in Marx's Das Kapital, were known simply as overlords. I wrote that one for you, Pete. They were known simply as overlords, and they ruled with a bony fist over the humans forced to eke out an existence in the limited valleys of the planet, not choked with poisonous gas. So the gas rises, and so the humans are all settled into these valleys where they essentially live. The overlords are kind of known for just like descending into towns, killing a bunch of people, and then using their corpses for their bone armies.
Well, yeah? I gotta say, right. Man, the poison gas rises to the top, and they probably deserve to be up there. just because it's just natural, man. It's the invisible hand of economics. Yeah.
It's trickle up. Trickle up poison gas.
See, invisible hand of the toxic weather.
Yeah,
exactly. Those are the poisonous jet stream. Like, yeah, yeah. Okay, uh-huh. We can trust in that.
I mean, Ronald Reagan was full of a lot of hot air. Might be onto something. So naturally, when a psychic space boy crash lands on the planet, the overlords take notice. Mortarion's unconscious body was found among the corpses on a battlefield. The conflict having been fought between two separate overlords, which was relatively normal. So the overlords would fight with each other. There's like an overlord, the high overlord called Nacare of Barbarus. It's not Barnabas, it's Barbarus. I kept writing Barnabas. I was like, I don't think this is the name of it. It's Barbarus.
That's
which
the
is
name
a
of,
much better name.
That's the name of Clavicus Ooh. Vile's dog, isn't it?
Let me double check.
I think so.
I just did a Clavicus Vile on Somerset this weekend, so I'm pretty sure it's Barbarus, yeah.
He's also one of the allies in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Barnabas.
Nice. You get to meet him again in ESO, guys. So look forward to it.
Oh, I do. Yay.
It's Barbus. Barbus is the Hound of Clans.
Barbus. Barbus. Oh, and Barbarus is the place that we're at with the Primarchs.
Yeah. This one Primarch, Kim. Barbarus, Barbarus. So the high overlord, Nacare, or Nacare, I don't know, Nacare of Barbarus, finds this wailing child where a normal child would have, quote, suffocated under all the corpses. And took him in with the intention of creating an heir. You know, he's got a fortress up in the toxic clouds. He needs some air. Am I right?
Yeah. Hey. I was gonna do it if you didn't. So respect, brother. Yeah.
Welcome to Lore Boys, where we race to be the first one to tell the same shitty joke.
Yeah. the quickest to the lowest hanging fruit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Us.
Yeah. And I'm the tallest. So Nacare named him Mortarion, or Child of Death, in the local Barbarian dialect of High Gothic.
Okay.
Mortarion was kept in the top of the tower, where the toxic cloud pushed the limits of his immortality. He's got, you guys will see throughout the episode, he's got a lot of Fiona from Shrek vibes.
He's green from all the poison, right?
He's got a green motif. I can give you guys a picture of what he looks like when he becomes full.
What if it's just exactly Fiona he sent?
I wish I'd found that low hanging fruit first, but I'm too excited by the cool fantasy art. You know?
No, I've seen the box at the store back when I was buying Warhammer, so he is really, really cool as far as like.
Yeah, he's we'll get into like where he falls, but a lot of green aesthetics, a lot of poison cloud aesthetics to him.
Glasses. Yeah.
He's got big moth wings.
This guy ain't got no glasses. What, two eyes? So Mortarion's kept at the top of this tower. The toxic clouds push the limits of even of his immortality. Overlord Nacare moved his own fortress to the tallest peak on Barbarus, where not even Mortarion could follow. So his adoptive dad is like, cool, here's your tower. It's full of a almost lethal dose of argon. At all times, I'm going up to Mount Argon to chill out, where you can't come.
Isn't that what's in light bulbs?
I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's
tungsten. Only when you turn them off, because then it's light argon.
No, I'm pretty sure it's tungsten filament argon gas. But anyways,
So Nacare trains Mortarion. Despite all the teachings of necromancy that he learned, Mortarion couldn't help but wonder about the pitiful creatures of the valleys who were used as pre-corpses for their necromantic overlords.
That's that is a very like great way that the elites would sell killing you to use your skeleton in their like ever-expanding army of the undead. It's like, no, you're not human fodder. your pre-corpses.
And it's exactly. Like, yeah.
You're not alive. So many people.
You're not alive. You're a pre-corpse. Exactly.
You just get whatever their equivalent on this planet of CNN to just repeat pre-corpses over and over again. Exactly. And all the boomers in the valley would be like, no.
49% of the voters would fucking vote for them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
With Diablo being popular right now, you know all the feels when you're a necromancer and you just want to fight a boss and there's no corpses for your army of the undead and you have to take a teleporter to a bunch of pre-corpses and then farm your corpses and go all the way back to them. It's that's why you got to have pre-corpses on hand. You know?
So the Toxic Cloud did earn it. He's working hard. As you know.
Exactly. Eventually, Mortarion's curiosity gets the better of him, and his compassionate nature, coupled with his concern for the oppressed denizens of the valleys, clash with the Overlord's desires to maintain control and exploit the weaker inhabitants for their own gain. Mortarion broke out of his father's tower, saved by an ogre and a donkey, and descended to a...
His long blonde hair, he just slid himself down.
He descends to a nearby valley to meet the people there. Once through the poisonous mist, Mortarion realizes the people living in the valleys were human, just like him. And he swore to free them from the yoke of alien necromancers. So again, I didn't see descriptions of the necromancers anywhere, but they weren't human. So it's like, my stepdad is an alien, would be the title of that, like, Goosebumps book or something, right?
Right.
that R.L. Stine novel.
You know, whenever they do the Wheel of Fortune... And they're like, we'll give you these letters on the puzzle. For
R.S. Stine.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost R.L. Stine.
Yeah.
You ever look at it that way?
I've never looked at it that way, admittedly.
And book titles. My stepdad is an alien. That's it. Bam, bam.
Yeah, my stepdad is a bullion. didn't get it.
So Mortarion goes to these, goes to play Wheel of Fortune with the townspeople living in the valley. Pat Sajak, Vanna White are suspicious of him. They're reluctant to let him in because they're like, hey, like we're just trying to eke out a very meager existence here under these like clouds of sulfuric acid, and like hope the necromantic aliens don't come down and use our pre-corpses. So naturally, they're pretty skeptical. Pale Boy Mortarion faces the challenge of gaining their trust, right? His opportunity to prove himself arises when creatures under the control of another warlord descend upon the village.
Uh-oh.
Witnessing the villagers' vulnerability, Mortarion fearlessly enters the battle wielding a massive harvesting scythe. That becomes his like iconic weapon. He has a scythe. In the picture I sent you guys, you'll see he has like his signature scythe.
It's like that guy who had used the sword in World War II or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems like you could use a gun.
Sword and longbow, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, because they're like pre-industrial technology on this. So the highest level of technology on Poison Gas Planet, on Barbarous, is pointy stick.
Oh, there is no guns in the Warhammer universe?
There is. So not on this planet, because again, like there was the Dark Ages and this planet was like set back and they haven't been contacted again by the space people. Yeah. So he's no guns yet.
but there's another neighboring planet that never invented the scythe and they're just like
mowing down their wheat. Yeah.
It just shoots out like big vertical blades, like a saw gun. Or it's like the Dead Space saw blade gun. Rippers.
Every fucking third field they harvest just ends up like catching fire and burning down.
I saw a guy today on Reddit. He was doing using a laser welder to cut his bananas down from his tree, and it was just basically a laser, and it would just like light it on fire around, and it would knock down the leaves or whatever. So.
That seems wildly inefficient.
It's not good. It's not a good way to do it, but he's like, could I do it? And he's after a minute, I can cut through a leaf. So.
For the content, yeah.
And he doused all the things with water first so they wouldn't burn down.
The end goal of CAPTCHA is to identify like banana stems so that we can train robots to cut the bananas off the trees for us.
With their lasers, yeah.
So Mortarion charges this, you know, enters the battle against this overlord's forces. The overlord's there. He's like, what the fuck? This isn't supposed to happen. You guys are supposed to just be pre-corpses.
Yeah.
He realizes that Mortarion poses a threat. He's like, I'm out of here. Back into the fart clouds for me. Mortarion, the superhuman resilience, was not about to be deterred by some farts, right?
Yeah.
Having shown, so he chases him, cuts him down, shows his worth to the people of the village. Martarian's son welcomed with open arms. Be like, oh, dude, why didn't you tell us you were 12 foot tall and wield a massive
sword
and are capable and immortal and capable of entering the poison clouds and capable of killing an entire, like an overlord's entire bone army?
Well, that
why didn't
is,
you say so? You know?
I didn't think you'd believe me, but now that you say it.
It didn't come up, honestly. Yeah. I thought my crochet skills spoke for themselves.
I had a way simpler lie thought up I figured you people would believe.
So Martarian seizes the chance to train the villagers in the ways of warfare, transforming these scattered settlements into fortified strongholds. The news of Martarian's prowess spread, attracting representatives from other villages who sought to learn from him. He travels around, he's imparting his knowledge, he's constructing defenses, he's safeguarding people, going to battles with various overlords. He trains talented humans in the ways of war. He enlists the aid of blacksmiths, craftsmen, and artificers to create specialized armor capable of withstanding the toxic fog permeating the upper atmospheres where the overlords hid.
Oh, like a bunch of like diving suits, like a bunch of like steampunk diving suits fighting a bone army is really cool.
Yeah. I love that vision of him walking through, making sure everyone's ready too. Like some guys with his sword and he walks and he like tips his elbow up a bit, like goes and like helps fasten someone's like armor from behind. He's just like walking down the hallway, just helping everyone just a little bit.
But he's also like 12 feet tall. So he's like very gingerly doing it.
Oh yeah.
Two fingers to fix the guy's stance.
Like
right?
Snaps one guy's neck, trying to like readjust his helmet. Like
trying to fix his collar.
The necromancer's weakened his spine. Their ways of bone magic.
So they
create like diving suits, like diving bells or whatever to traverse the mist, gas masks, whatever you want to call them. And now they're taking the fight to the overlords, right? Now they're going to the overlords' fortresses up in these mountain fastnesses.
Big daddy never thought they'd sorry.
Big daddies versus necromancers.
That'd exactly.
Cool time, man. Yeah.
Like the overlords didn't have a plan. It's just like, well, no, we raised the dead in front of them once. That terrified them into submission. But now we have some guy to deal with. Like our bone army is there. They don't even have weapons.
They just got other bones that they swing around.
Yeah.
Every time they swing around their left arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could be resurrected over and over. I don't know. I'd still put some money on the neck. What are those guys? They're not Necrons. They're
necromancers.
Necromancers. Yeah, they don't have a title.
Regular old necromancers. Okay. With each battle fought in the treacherous mist, Mortarion and his Death Guard learn to refine the armor and adapt themselves to overcome the increasingly poisonous challenges they face. So the higher up they go, it seems like it's implied, and I didn't read the novels that this is from. So it seems to implied in like the research that I did that like there's a hierarchy of like the higher your tower. You know, as an overlord, the more powerful and important you are. So they're kind of like literally working their way up that food chain.
And it gets more and more poisonous. You ever been in a lake and you swim down and there's like a clear line of like, it gets way colder when you pass this point.
Yeah.
It's like, there's that hot water layer on top. That's like the air that we're in. And you're going into the way cold whenever the higher up we're going. Yeah.
The way toxic. Exactly.
Way toxic, yeah.
I like to think that the armor they've been inventing is like the still suit from Dune, but instead of retaining every drop of water, it's just like, it's got the tube going into your nose. It just retains every molecule of fart gas so you can build up an immunity to the poison cloud.
Eventually, only one peak remains. The dwelling place of Mortarion's adoptive father and the final obstacle in their quest for absolute control over the poisonous heights. Despite being raised by the ruthless necromancer Hylo Overlord Nakair, Mortarion couldn't bring himself to attack his adoptive father, right? Despite seeing, you know, how vicious he was, cruel he was to the people that he now serves, he's still like, but he is the only father I've ever known. He heeds the advice of one of his most trusted soldiers, Callus Typhon, who will come back, who cautions him against premature action. Says like, no, you know, we can take our time with this. You know, he's the last overlord left. We've kind of got him cornered. He's not too much of a threat. So Mortarion is like, okay, I'll spend some time, some years, whatever, focusing on the impending confrontation, and if I have to fight him eventually, I will fight him, right? Returning to the... So they had kind of been approaching, or they'd been, like, fought another battle somewhere. They return to the village, and he's like...
As he walks away from his dad, just, like, walks away, turns around, one of those, you know? Yeah.
Crank the arm back, like, you're going to punch him. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're all right for now.
Knock
out
your bony ass.
So they return to the village, but he's pretty quickly like upset because he discovers that his people were buzzing with talk about a stranger who promised salvation for the inhabitants of Barbarus. There's a new guy in town who's like, yeah, I'll fucking save you from all the overlords. No problem. Intrigued and protective of his people, Mortarion confronts the stranger, asserting that his village needed no outside assistance. The stranger acknowledged Mortarion's struggles and proposed a challenge. If Mortarion could defeat the High Overlord Nekair, the stranger would depart. But if Mortarion failed, he would pledge allegiance to the stranger. If you guys remember previous episodes, we know who this is. It's the Emperor of Mankind. This is his MO, is he goes to the planets where his children are and challenges them to a feat, essentially, to prove themselves. Right. And then if they succeed, they almost inevitably fail in their challenges. And that's always the other side of it, is like, cool, if you fail, you pledge allegiance to me for all time.
I guess because this is pre-heresy, in my head, I was like, I wonder if this is a twist on the mysterious God Emperor Stranger comes into town, and it would be Nurgle in this case, like kind of stealing from the same playbook.
No, but it's funny you mentioned Nurgle. So the Emperor Mankind says, like, hey, like, go fight your dad, and, you know, if you win, cool, I'll leave, and if you lose, then you gotta work for me, basically. Right?
I don't remember what happens. If they win, do they get to find out that, oh, I'm your dad or whatever? Like, do they get to have that nice moment, or does he just leave forever?
He would just leave forever, but it never happens. He's also like prescient, the Emperor of Mankind. He can like see the future, so like he knows how things are gonna shake out, basically.
Okay.
So he only offers challenges that he knows people will fail. So despite objections from his loyal Death Guard, Mortarion embarked alone on a perilous journey to face the last necromancer on Barbarus. The air surrounding the Overlord's fortress was so toxic that not even Mortarion's armor could resist it, and it begins to peel off of him. Undeterred, he's bellowing challenges to Nekair, driven by the desire to prove himself to this enigmatic stranger. He doesn't know this Emperor yet. Unfortunately, his challenges weren't answered, as Nekair realized, like, this idiot's just gonna poison himself to death, so I'm not gonna open the door. So Mortarion, his armor cracks open eventually. All this poison gas gets in. It overwhelms even his immortality. He collapses when a voice resonates within his mind. The voice spoke of Mortarion's death, of how he and his Death Guard were doomed to fail should he not submit. He didn't know it at the time, but this was the voice of Papa Nurgle speaking sweet nothings into his thoughts.
Okay. Wake up, pussy.
Yeah. wake up, samurai. We got a village to plague.
Yes,
Mortarion, staring down his own death as Nekair finally descends the fortress to deliver the killing blow while taunting him, sees the stranger intervene, interposing himself between Mortarion and the High Overlord. He dispatches Nekair with a single stroke of his flaming sword. In the wake of the confrontation, Mortarion fulfilled his pledge of fealty to the Emperor of Mankind, so he did submit as he said he would.
Okay, cool.
The God Emperor bestowed upon his newest Primarch command of the 14th Space Marine Legion, who were known at the time as the Dusk Raiders. Despite the gifts, buried within Mortarion's heart was a festering grudge, as the Emperor's intervention had denied him the final vengeance he had sought, feeling a deep-seated and slow-burning resentment. And
in the back, left me up there to die, sort of thing.
More like, if you never sent me up there, challenged me, like, I would have done it in my own time. I would have, you know, he was my adoptive father. And so, like, I should have been the one to do it, sort of thing.
Yeah. I've been putting one drop of poisonous atmospheric gas in my cereal every morning to build up an immunity. I just needed 5,000 more years.
Yeah, exactly.
Dad, I asked you to help me with my math homework, not write the answers down. I could have done it myself.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared for my test.
Well, this is like his dad showed up at school and killed the teacher. And was like, I teach you math now.
Yeah, if you don't finish your math homework, if you don't get 100% on your math test, then you got to be homeschooled. That's the agreement. Yeah.
Oh, no, I hate that.
And if you do get 100% on your math test, I'll just leave. I'll leave. No problem.
Yeah.
So he's got this deep-seated grudge kind of burning in him. And in the back of his mind, the echoes of a voice still linger. But
I'll teach you fractions. No, God.
More on that after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Joining the Emperor's legions, Mortarion, true to his oath, humbled himself before his newfound father, bearing the scars, both physical and mental, of his defiant acts on Barbarus. Clad in a grim and spectral robe, wielding the ominous black scythe that once belonged to his nightmarish foster father, Mortarion appeared before the Terran-born Dusk Raiders. To them, he resembled an ancient, ghostly figure akin to the Grim Reaper himself.
That's very cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, they're the... So, basically, in a, you know, he speaks to them in a harsh whisper. They all hear, "You are my unbroken blades. You are the Death Guard. By your hand, justice shall be served and doom shall befall 1,000 worlds."
Wow.
So he's like a chill guy. He's like, you know, like I said, he's into crochet.
I mean, if it wasn't for the whisper directly into the back of your mind, it'd be different. Because if he was kind of like a more of like a chill dude, like a surfer bro, he's like, "Yo, 1,000 worlds will die by your hand." He would be a cool guy.
Bro, you're like my unbroken blades, guys. You're the Death Guard, you know? by your hand, justice will be served, bro. Doom shall befall 1,000 worlds.
Gnarly!
So thus was the Legion's name changed from Dusk Raiders to Death Guard. And Mortarion's words were etched above the airlock door of the battle barge Reaper's Scythe, immortalizing the transformative moment. The Dusk Raiders ceased to exist, their name replaced by one that instilled fear within the hearts of mankind's enemies, forever recorded in the annals of history.
That's not how you say it.
Jamie, I beg to differ. That's how I say it every single time.
Actually, it's firstery.
Okay. excuse me. The annals of herstory.
There we go.
So before Martarian's arrival, the 14th Legion had predominantly comprised of Terran-born Astartes. However, with Mortarion's inclusion, the Legion's neophytes were primarily sourced from the feral world of Barbarus. So,
his old crew, obviously.
Exactly. And this was a pretty common thing with a lot of the Primarchs, where they're like, "Yeah, I'm going to recruit the people that I grew up with because they've proven themselves in battle with me, so I'm going to take them on." Mortarion was like very particular about it, but he's kind of taking over this very, he's a country mouse and he's got an army of city mice now. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of culture clash between them over the years. The shift in recruitment alters their cultures and traditions. As the Great Crusade neared its end in the early 31st millennium, tensions grew between the Barbarus-born Astartes and the remaining Terran minority who clung to the Dusk Raiders' ancient martial customs from old Terra. Under Mortarion's guidance, the renamed 14th Legion dedicated itself wholeheartedly to the Great Crusade. Relentlessly, they fought, with their Primarch's watchful gaze upon them, pursuing the liberation of mankind with an unparalleled fervor. Their unyielding fleet traversed the cold void, perpetually engaged in campaigns, resupplying on the move, never pausing except to wage war. The Death Guard did not concern themselves with garrisons or constructions. They existed solely to dismantle and annihilate. They are a spear tip in that they are just like, give me something to kill.
Yeah.
Okay. Which I think is a voice line from a ghost in StarCraft 2.
Give me something to kill.
Yeah, it's also a voice line of a very good student known as David Lee Roth, who says, "Give me something to write on, baby," because he wants to write with a pen. Yeah.
Give me something to kill on, baby.
A thousand worlds shall feel our David Lee Wrath.
Yeah, well, hey, David Lee Wrath was hot for teacher, so was the Emperor, the God Emperor of Mankind.
Hell
hot
yeah.
Teacher, yeah. Right? Start up your spaceship and the rumble, it just sounds like the drums at the beginning.
What do you think the Emperor's going to look like this year?
Whoa!
So Martarian's influence molded the Death Guard's creeds and practices, like I said, seamlessly integrating with their existing beliefs and doctrines, gradually refining and pushing them to extremes. Central to their principles was Mortarian's unwavering conviction that humanity should be freed from oppression and terror. Noble, lofty ideals. You love to see it, right? Surely he would never turn out to be a fascist.
Don't call me a fascist, Shirley. I mean, don't.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a fascist, and don't call me Shirley.
In Mortarian's eyes, true liberation could only be achieved by eradicating those who sought to enslave and devour humanity. This was a war that knew no bounds, merciless, unrestrained, and unrelenting. Victory in the battle for humanity's future required enduring any hardship, no matter how harrowing, and embracing any savage act to secure triumph. Mortarian justified any means in the pursuit of a single end, the liberation of humanity as defined by his creed.
Wow.
Cool.
The downfall of like almost every political movement that we talk about. The by any means necessary guy is not the guy you want to follow.
No. I say like, sure hope he doesn't turn out to be a fascist. They're all fucking fascists. The people who follow the emperor are fascists. Like,
yeah, they have an emperor for Christ's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why they call this world grim dank, because fascism is dank or something, right?
Something.
Yeah. I don't think it is.
No, that's why they call me ho. That's why they call me sexy, because fascism is dank. James Miller, 2023.
Yeah. Wait, it'll show up. I know. In our out of context quotes. Yeah.
So Mortarian's unyielding perseverance got him quickly noticed by the War Master, and the Death Guard would often find themselves campaigning alongside Horus and his Luna Wolves. The Death Guard, under Mortarian's command, would exhaust and weaken the enemy, setting the stage for the decisive strikes of the Luna Wolves. This tactical synergy proved remarkably successful, forging a deep bond between Mortarian and Horus. You know, cool. Take a look at the friends somebody keeps if you want to know who they are, right?
Yeah, I said fascism is dank, so look at my friends, don't look at me.
We're more co-hosts than friends, I'd say.
Colleague.
Yeah, this is like a co-worker relationship, honestly. Jamie's like always like at the break room at the Lore Boys at HQ is always like, you guys want to like do something after work? Me and Peter are always busy. Like, it's so awkward.
It sounds like trying to get this podcast together. Am I right? Pete's got dinner. Ethan's got a baby. Little old James just flexible and ready just to see his friends.
Little old James is flexible and ready is a great. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Jamie on vacation in Poland from the podcast, of course. Right. Just like still like calling into work just to hear his coworkers' voices.
Yeah, calling in absent just to hang up on the HR lady.
Yeah.
I just rewatched Happiness and what's his name? Philip Seymour Hoffman. He does a lot of calling people and listening to their voices, but it's a lot creepier.
Sounds creepy.
Yeah, his quote is in the Life Ruiner song, "You're a black hole, you are fucking nothing." And yeah. Anyways.
There you go.
Yeah.
So a somber and resolute Primarch, Mortarian's distinctive visage was incomplete without his breath apparatus and scythe. So he still wears the breathing apparatus. That they kind of
is it decorative at this point, or does he need it now because he's like used to? Okay,
I think Loreboy's canon. I'm gonna say like his lungs were ruined by almost dying on toxic fart.
So he's got a sleep apnea machine all the time now,
24/7. Yeah, he's got a sleep apnea machine and he's got a wake apnea machine.
Oh man,
I got wake apnea.
I mean, okay. I'll say it, when I get really into video games and I forget where my tongue is in my mouth, I'll sometimes make a little snoring noise. And I've been called out on Discord, like, Yuni, your mic. Because I'm just really in my rotation, you know, full focus. But, yeah.
Many regard this pale and hairless figure as an anomaly, causing him to remain aloof from most of his fellow Primarchs, with the notable exceptions of Horus, the War Master, and Conrad Kurz, the enigmatic leader of the Night Lords Legion, who will also fall to the Chaos Gods.
Okay.
I lost my place. Concerned.
I love the name Conrad.
Conrad's not bad. Conrad Kurz. It's like Kurz, but with a Z. Or a Z for the Americans listening. So concerns rise among certain Primarchs, such as Rabuti Gulliman, who harbors apprehensions that Mortarian's loyalty leaned more towards Horus than the Emperor. Shocking. Nonetheless, during that era, the emperor himself maintained that, quote, allegiance to Horus automatically implies allegiance to himself. So emperor's not worried. Like I said, they're besties. That's the quote for you guys to show just how besties they are. And again, we've talked about the Horus heresy. I'll do another set of episodes on it if you guys want. But just to show, like, it was quite the betrayal.
Yeah.
The relentless passage of time witnesses the Death Guard undergo a profound metamorphosis, shedding its Terran origins and embracing the austere principles of Barbarossa's brutal warfare. Mortarion, with unwavering conviction, strips away the Legion's previous adornments and symbols, leaving behind a somber aesthetic marked by the jade-hued imprints reminiscent of the corrosive-resistant mud found on the armor of Barbarossa's warriors. So that's like, okay, their look is fully, at this point, like the people he fought with on Barbaros.
Yeah, they're a home team at this point, completely. There's exactly. No, yeah.
You can hide from the Terminator that way, or the Predator that way.
The Predator.
Exactly. The Predator, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Terminator was the one hiding from the Predator.
Right, but it wasn't actually the Terminator, but it would.
No, it was.
Okay.
If you play a character in a movie, and you play, and you're an actor in another movie, you're always all the characters that you've played. So anytime Arnold Schwarzenegger's in a movie, like in Twins with Danny DeVito, he was also the T-1000 in that movie.
Oh, and in Junior, when he's pregnant, he's a pregnant metal skeleton.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, and when Jake Gyllenhaal becomes the guy at night who goes around and solves crime, it's really because he's a gay cowboy and he's trying to kiss all the criminals on the mouth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's also the guy who jerked off in the therapist's office when he was hypnotized.
I don't remember that movie.
Donnie Darko.
Vigilante.
Huh?
Nightcrawler,
right?
Nightcrawler. Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's not a vigilante. He solves crimes. He's like a journalist or something. Okay. I haven't seen it. But.
He gets there first, and he takes the pictures first, and then he sells the pictures.
He's the paparazzo.
Yeah, but then he starts to see things, and then like messes with the crime scenes and stuff. But anyways, go. Gotcha. It is a good movie.
And eventually, probably becomes suspect numero uno.
Again, yeah, because he's gay. Seen it,
if I had to guess. Okay, yeah. Yeehaw, partner.
Yeah.
The structured hierarchy inherited from older war masters dissolves under Mortarion's disdain for witchcraft specifically, resulting in the disbandment of the Legion's librarius. His distaste for paganism comes from the sinister practices once wielded by the enigmatic masters of death on Barbarossa. So he's like, I don't like witches because there was witches on my home earth and they were bad. Right. So he's like, no more witches in our in my Legion. And the Legion used to, like, a lot of their tactics were built around these psykers who would utilize warp energies to use magic or cast spells
to psych out their opponents.
Exactly with the fake punch, like you did.
Yeah, exactly.
Witchcraft.
For the power of the warp to make their little brothers flinch.
Mortarion's indomitable will permeated every aspect of the Legion's transformation, from revising tactical doctrines and equipment acquisition to meddling in the selection of recruits and implementing changes within the Apothecarian. He left an indelible mark on his Legion's evolution. Despite murmurs suggesting the euthanization or relocation of the remaining inhabitants of Barbarossa for their own well-being, Mortarion would never have let that happen, right? He always opposed it. So there was like talk for a while about like, hey, you know, these barbarous people, like, they're so sickly. They're so pathetic and pale. Like, should we just put them down? obviously, Mortarion is pretty against that.
What if we sent that entire planet to a nice farm upstate?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Try explaining that to your 7-year-old kid, right?
oh, they cried about the genocide at home, but they're fine now that we're here at the planet.
Mommy, can I play with Barbarossa today? Oh, honey, Barbarossa had to go upstate.
Oh, no. Barbarossa is a dog, too, yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, to Mortarion, the planet Barbarossa now belonged to his people, a testament to their resilience and the sacrifices made across generations. The hardiest sons of Barbarossa were elevated to the ranks of the new Death Guard. The pure humans who had fought alongside Mortarion against Barbarossa's tyrants ascended to positions of power, forming a feared ruling class on the planet of Barbarossa. So the class divide remains. Something fascism. Some willingly underwent partial or complete transformation into the Legion's Astartes. So they were given the gift of the gene seed. They're given the gift of Godcom, undeterred by the risk associated with the late induction, driven by their unwavering loyalty to Mortarion. So you guys will maybe remember they usually give it to children to grow into super soldiers, but they, right, you can, yeah, give it to adults. Some adults just die from it, though.
You see, like, when Astartes, he's got braces, you're just like, oh, you grew up poor.
Yeah.
It's exactly different late in life.
Big old hick. He's got, like, straw hat. He's, like, snaggly teeth, like, 12 foot tall, like, super lanky.
He's got the, give him the gift of the gene teeth. It's just, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, let's straighten those right out.
Yeah. There's a space dream with, like, a straw hat and a pitchfork. It's like,
yeah. Well, it's farm equipment, right? He's got the, yeah, scythe. Second in command, exactly, gets the pitchfork.
The pitchfork, yeah, exactly.
Garden shears, that guy too. Yeah. Or it's like American Gothic. The American Gothic,
yeah, yeah,
painting of the old couple.
Just to Astartes, like Mortarion with his gas mask.
What's that painting called?
American Gothic.
American Gothic.
Okay, you said, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Barbarus itself becomes a breeding ground for the Death Guard, churning out new recruits to replenish the ranks of the Legion. External sources of recruitment dwindle, save for dire circumstances where battlefield losses reach critical levels. Mortarion reluctantly allows non-Barbaran recruits to bolster the Legion's strength. The remarkable resilience of Barbarus' feral population proves invaluable over time. The fact that they grew up under harsh circumstances, they got, you know, they're street smart, basically.
Okay.
Street smart country mice. The Legion's gene seed magnifies their natural resistance to contagions and toxins to unprecedented levels. So they're poison resisting guys. You got good poison. Well,
they can start taking over some of the presumably empty necromancer towers, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I can finally move out of this one horse valley.
Yeah. Okay. I can move to a tower by itself in the middle of the mountains in the big old fart cloud.
Move, yeah, out of the small town, get your bone castle.
As fresh recruits poured in from Barbarus, the Terran contingent within the Legion gradually diminishes further, though their combat experience and unwavering resolve remained a formidable force in the Legion's ranks, despite playing a secondary role in Mortarion's eyes. Now, Mortarion's distaste for sorcery would have broader implications than just within the ranks of his own Death Guard. The Council of Nikaea,
right,
held.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Nikaea,
right? Their spaceship is just a giant snake that comes and lands.
Oh,
in the,
yeah,
yeah. Nokia. Yeah.
So the Council of Nikaea, held during the Great Crusade in the Warhammer universe, was a gathering organized by the Emperor of Mankind to evaluate the potential risks and benefits of psychic powers for humanity and the growing Imperium of Man. The council itself prominently featured the...
They work in, like, loss prevention for psychic abilities. Like, they're like, yeah, go test it, but, like, if it's gonna fuck us up, like, yeah, forget us with that shit, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think there was, like, a growing understanding of, like, this was tied to the warp, and they've been fighting, like, chaos monsters over time, right? And they're like, right, oh, you know, like, is it derived from the same thing? Is it evil? Psychic powers will just, like, devour a person and, like, destroy their soul if used, like, too much too, right? So, like,
right,
yeah, there's like, costs to it.
Okay.
The council itself prominently features the Primarch Magnus the Red defending the use of sorcery, while other Primarchs, in particular Mortarion, denounced its use. I have a quote for you guys from Magnus the Red, as recorded during the Council of Nikaea. He is, like, by far, he's, like, the witch. He's, like, the sorcery Primarch. He loves it. His Legion uses it to, like, extreme effect, and, like, he's all in on witchcraft and wizardry.
Yeah, I love the Thousand Suns figurines as well. They're so cool.
Yeah, okay, I got the quote. I could not recommend Reign of Terror enough. It's a Diablo 2 mod running on Grim Dawn and by far the best Diablo game I've ever played. That's what I got from Magnus the Red.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Yeah. That's Magnus the Pink. That's Magnussy the Pink, okay?
Oh, yeah, sorry. He's Magnus the Rad at time of recording, I guess.
Fucking, well, dude, bro, that is so sick, dude. how did he preempt our joke there?
Yeah.
So here's a quote. Many have spoken of the evils of the psyker, the sorcerer, and the witch, that the art is intrinsically wrong simply because it can be used to perform terrible deeds. I say that one must instead consider that this evil is a projection of the fears of the many who do not understand the possibilities that await mankind if we can tame the dangers of this art. That it is this multitude of lesser sins that is the real issue for this council. So just to illustrate how, like, he's like, nah, it's not like the, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah, it's the motion of the ocean argument, right?
Yeah. Unlike others, and maybe this is like a better comparison would be like, I don't know, when Edison was racing to popularize electricity, you know, like electricity doesn't kill people. Faulty sockets do.
Yeah.
People, you know, vivisecting frogs and making them dance, making the corpses dance afterwards.
Magnus motions to introduce like the plastic cap to go over the warp so you can't like jam a fork in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's vivisect? I know dissect, bisect.
I'm not sure.
I think it's just open up.
The practice of performing operations on live animals.
Oh, you gotta be so alive.
Oh, that's the vivid. That's the old Italian.
Oh, for okay. Life.
Yeah.
I'm referencing, there's some guy who used to make like corp, like when electricity was first a thing, he was like a traveling, like, behold, you like bring out a corpse and like make it dance with electricity.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
Yeah, they came to our schools too, and they showed us how potatoes would run a light bulb.
Yeah. They made the corpses dance.
Yeah, made the corpses dance. And
I want to say he blew up a pickle.
Yeah, you remember, don't be a silly dill, 120 volts can kill, he would say.
I do not remember that at all. Like,
yeah. I was just thinking, it's like he's like,
you're
a
the only person
necromancer
on earth who could remember that. But
you remembered the pickle, you're halfway there.
Now, living on a prayer, my guy.
Yeah.
Unlike others who spoke against Magnus Red and the use of psychic abilities without substantial evidence or argument, Mortarian's intervention was concise, detached, and impactful. He drew from personal experiences. Mortarian passionately condemned sorcery, offering a dire warning regarding its usage by the Emperor's servants. His straightforward and forceful testimony left a lasting impression on the Emperor, compelling Magnus to vigorously defend psychic abilities more vehemently than he had initially intended. So Magnus ends up like having egg on his face and being like the guy like, no, it's totally cool. It's fine. Like, it's fucking fine.
David Blade put my watch through a window and onto another guy's wrist while he was eating dinner. And I can't have this shit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mortarian found satisfaction in the Emperor's subsequent decree, which outlaws sorcery entirely and led to the disbandment of the Space Marines Legion's Librarius divisions. The librarians were integrated back into the ranks of the Line Astartes, bound by an oath to never again wield their powers.
Okay.
So magic is against the law.
David Blaine, actually, you know what, is a good example for why magic might should be against the law. Because he was trying to do a cool trick where someone would shoot a bullet and he would like catch it in this like retainer he had in his mouth. Here? But it slipped and he just got shot in the face.
David Blaine?
Yeah. And then he just went, he taught himself to do it again and he did it again and did it successfully.
Okay. Just like a... Like, not he a real die. Bullet, right? Yeah.
Well, he got shot in the face. It wasn't like a fun woo-hoo accident and you just go home after that. Like, it... Anyways, sorry, I think it's less interesting to fact check me than it is just to laugh and move on.
That's fair. Sorry, I was looking up the story more than anything. I was like, you shoot yourself in the face? I don't remember ever seeing this.
I heard it on another podcast, so don't even fact check me.
There you go. Yeah. When War Master Horus turned on the Emperor, inciting a civil war that spanned the galaxy, all the Primarchs were forced to choose sides. Horus, a cunning manipulator, exploited Mortarian's animosity towards their gene father. He revealed to him that the Emperor had delved into the powers of the warp to create the Primarchs, much like Nicaris' sorceress practices on Barbarus. Mortarian still felt the slight from all those years ago when the Emperor had stolen the killing blow against the adoptive father from his homeworld. And Horus promised Mortarian a chance to cleanse the Imperium of the Emperor's deceit and build a new order, untainted by their father's lies. Adding to the seduction was Callus Typhon, Mortarian's trusted second in command, who was the Death Guard who warned him not to act rashly.
Right, yeah.
Secretly, Callus, over the years, had embraced chaos and influenced the Death Guard to follow suit. So he was kind of like seeding, he is like was worshipping chaos, and he was like starting cults within the Legion, basically.
He was handing out pamphlets, right? He's just like, no, yeah. You just need to come, and it's all vegan. You can come by, just hang out. We'll give you one of our books. It's going to be great.
All right.
So during the tragic events of something called the Drop Site Massacre, Mortarion reveals his true allegiance by sacrificing the loyalist elements of the Death Guard. A lot of them, most of them, the Terran-born warriors still fighting amongst his myth, and fights along the traitors.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Primarch Jagatai Khan, I'm gonna biff that a lot, and I'll send you guys a picture.
Put a cool accent on it. Maybe that'll help.
Jagatai Khan, man. Huh?
Very cool.
Yeah. Oh, he does look very cool, actually.
Yeah, so Khan is in Genghis Khan, clearly inspired by the Huns. Yeah. Shout out to Eric with a K, who has requested Jagatai Khan lore. That's not this episode, but he has a fair amount, and I'll do one on him someday, I promise. Jagatai Khan of the White Scars had been absent during the kickoff of the Horus Heresies. Basically, he's out grabbing milk, you know. Suspicious astropathic messages hinted at the growing unease and the civil war kind of brewing, and the Khan's encounter with Lemon Russ of the Space Wolf further deepened his concerns. So he meets Lemon Russ at some point, and they kind of hit off, and he's like, oh, this is, and Lemon Russ is kind of telling him about, yeah, there's kind of a civil war back home, so be careful.
Lemon Russ. That's a cool name.
We did a whole episode on him, if you want to go back and listen to it.
Lemon Russell. Yeah, I don't remember him.
That was a long time ago. I think it might have been one of our first primers. Yeah. Determined to understand the truth, Jagatai Khan embarks on a journey to Prospero, seeking answers from Magnus the Red, the only brother he truly trusted. On Prospero, Jagatai stumbled upon Mortarion, who had been trailing him for some time. Uh-oh. Clad in formidable Terminator armor, Mortarion's elite bodyguard, the Death Shroud, accompanied him. Mortarion reveals his purpose in seeking out Jagatai. He's
like a bunch of pregnant Arnold Schwarzeneggers, like flanking him.
With Danny DeVito's baby, of course.
Danny DeVito's the gene seed.
I know you want to do American Gothic, but please just consider the picture of like Sonic and Goku, like having the like pregnant Sonic with like Goku spooning him or whatever, but instead make it Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm just saying, consider it. That's all.
Like, I wrote down American Gothic after it popped into my head. I have another 2 minutes. Yeah.
Chris Chan has ruined all Sonic fan art for me. It's just, it's all scary now.
Mortarion wants to recruit Jagatai Khan. Mortarion's crusade against witches in the Imperium had worked. The sorcery was outlawed in the Empire. But Horus's new empire was lousy with them. Most of the other Primarchs, you know, Magnus turns traitor as well. They're all very pro sorcery, and they don't really trust Mortarion. Mortarion, you guys remember, was like awkward and pale and like unnerving, pretty much, and didn't have any social skills, so he didn't really have any friends among the Primarchs either.
He looked like the Grim Reaper himself.
Exactly. Yeah. he's very much like the kid who wears a trench coat in high school, you know?
Yeah.
The guy who runs the boat in Hades, fucking
Karen.
Karen.
Yeah, yeah. Every time you talk to him, he's just like,
ugh. Yeah. Exactly. So Mortarion was running out of friends among the traitor Primarchs. He's like, he joined Horus, but like Horus is like, he joined for Horus, but Horus is always busy. Horus is leading the dang heresy. He was named after him, for heaven's sake. So he's like, you know, don't really trust the other traitors. But Jagatai Khan is a very martial like Primarch as well. So he goes to him. He's like, hey, like, you're like me. We could be friends, right? Like, hey, man, I've been following you for like a couple decades through the galaxy. I just wanted to talk to you. Like, you want to be friends? The Khan, recognizing the bitterness and hidden motives behind his brother's words, chose to remain loyal to the Emperor. So being like, you don't want to be my friend, dude. You're just like weird and alone. I get that, and I feel for you, but like, also, I'm not going to blow up my whole life for that.
I watched a YouTube video about how sorcerers are bad. Can I share it with you on Facebook?
No, you can't.
Open your eyes, Jagatai. So they fight. They fight over it. Their confrontation escalates into a fierce battle between the two Primarchs and their retinues. Their clash symbolizes the conflict of ideologies and the fate of the Imperium. While they fought, their fleets engaged in a full-scale war in orbit around Prospero. The battle destroys Tiska, City of Light, and Mortarion, losing the 1v1 versus Jagatai Khan, and seeing that there's no other victories for him here, teleports him and his fleet away into the warp. He's like, cool, you won't join. We were fighting. I'm losing. There's nothing else for me here. We're gone. Me and my fleet are gone. And they just disappear into the warp because he's got those powers now.
Oh, I was going to say, is that not magic? He's You mean he had magic the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, he does. I don't know. Okay. He's weird. It's not magic when I do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Self-hating magic Primarch in a tent with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I don't have a TV at home, but I'll take the metro if I'm downtown, you know? Like,
So, filled with bitterness from his defeat against Jagatai Khan, Mortarion abandons his pursuit of the White Scars, Jagatai Khan's legion, and embarks on a vengeful campaign across the systems of the lost Prosperine Empire. So he's like, cool, I'm just gonna do what Death Guards do, which is just destroy worlds, right? World after world falls under the onslaught of his Death Guard as the insular Primarch seemed consumed by the need to lash out and destroy. Finally, his search leads him to Terathalion, a former repository of knowledge under the guidance of distant masters on Prospero. I keep saying Prospero. It was the capital of the Imperium.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah. Or the capital or a capital, not Terra, but very important. Very, very important.
I love the names. We're doing fine. We're prospering. Yeah, we're great.
We're very a headless Mario, like, we are Prospero. there's your cool accent that you requested, by the way.
Thanks, man. You're really good at those.
So he ends up on Terathalion, this repository of knowledge, this like library world, essentially. When Mortarion's Death Guard emerged into the system, they appeared as grim, corpse-gray behemoths, and it wasn't just a mere squadron that arrived, but an entire battle group. So just a huge force of Death Guard. Orbital bombardment ensued, leaving few survivors who cautiously emerged from hiding, only to witness the descent of drop pods carrying the entirety of the Death Guard Legion onto the planet.
Oh, no.
So he seems to be driven by, and from what I could tell, again, without having read the novels, it seems like he might not know why he's so hell-bent on destroying this planet or getting to this planet, but it'll become clear. So,
well, his own conscience snuck up on him at this point probably millennia ago and gave him a couple of bad ideas that has just been stuck there for some reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, there might be like a whispering demon king in his
that's what I mean.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, consciousness in the Jiminy Cricket sense, like a physical thing.
Gotcha. Despite the injuries he still bore from the Khan, driven by a desire even he couldn't identify, Mortarion teleported to the surface in search of someone. He captures a woman and transports her aboard his flagship, the Endurance. Within the confines of his private quarters, he interrogates the woman, who turns out to be not a woman, but a warp demon in a dress. This encounter with a creature from the Imperium challenged Mortarion's belief that such entities were mere fabrications. So, like, the Imperium is another name for the warp. So he's been to the warp, he's traveled through it. He hid his people there for a time, but he's never really, you know, seen demons or met demons at this point very much, or like at least like intelligent ones, it seems. And now he's confronted with one. And he was, again, it seems like he was drawn here by something to meet this demon who would then challenge his beliefs. The demon reveals that Mortarion's brothers Lorgar and Fulgrim willingly dealt with beings from the warp, claiming that they had come to recognize the true order of things. So Lorgar and Fulgrim are Chaos Primarchs. They both convert as well. However, Mortarion remains steadfast in his conviction that all sorcery was a blight, a cancer that humanity must repel. Despite his destructive search for answers and the realization that he was surrounded by the damned, he yearned to understand chaos and overcome it. The demon taunted Mortarion, ridiculing his belief that he alone could negotiate with the gods of the warp without consequence. It revealed the multitude of forces within the Imperium, one of which had Mortarion's name etched upon its throne, waiting for him. So it's like, hey, yeah, like you don't think that we're real, but I'll show you like a real another dimension where we've got a throne waiting just for you, buddy.
Yeah, it's like an as per my previous email thing, right? Where it's just like, I contacted you about the death throne before, buddy.
Determined to confront the truth, Mortarion literally confronted the demon with his scythe. Enraged, he taps into his latent psychic abilities, delving into sorcery and the powers he had vehemently opposed. So when they disappeared into the warp earlier, again, like without having explicitly read the source material, seems like he did it by mistake, didn't realize what he was doing, didn't realize it was the warp, didn't realize it was sorcery, whatever. And now he's like full blown, like unleashing psychic attacks on this creature. With the demon weaken, Mortarion unleashes his fury upon it, embracing the dark path he had always despised. As the demon perished, it mocked Mortarion as the master of the plague, exposing his delusions and false purity. Realizing the relentless grasp of the warp, Mortarion acknowledged that he had to embrace sorcery to comprehend and conquer it. He accepted his fate, willing to become a psyker, a master of witchery, even if it meant resembling his foster father on Barbarous. During the Horus Heresy, the Death Guard Legion, led by Mortarion, joined the traitor legions in the assault on Terra. However, their fleet became trapped in the Immaterium due to the actions of First Captain Callus Typhon. Callus Typhon kind of betrays him, kind of becomes his own, like, leader of a demon cult of Astartes, of people. I'm not exactly sure. But he, like, betrays Mortarion and the Death Guard, and the Death Guard get trapped in the warp in an, quote, eternal nightmare, which is cool.
Callus Typhon's very cool looking as well.
I didn't look him up. Didn't look
very
him up
heavily
at all.
Armored space marine with, again, a big set
for us.
The eternal, I'm working on it. The eternal nightmare for while you guys are doing that, by the way, is just the entire army is in one big classroom and no one has pants on and they're all screaming.
And the emperor keeps showing up and killing their math teacher.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
During the Typhon, having discovered his psychic potential during the Great Crusade, led Mortarion down a dark path, influencing his eventual fall to Chaos. So it was also like Typhon was kind of masterminding things for Chaos with the setting up the cult. And also maybe he was the one who told Mortarion he's got to find the woman. I'm not sure.
Well, you've also got to like manipulate your immortal buddy if you want to do evil, right?
Exactly.
Beats as Chinese a Transformer has a big scythe with a skull on it like that.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Sorry.
All good. I'm making a note because you punched your microphone. That's all. As the Death Guard languished in the warp, they fell victim to the insidious forces of Nurgle, the plague god. Their resilience against toxins and contagions proved futile as they succumbed to the destroyer plague and Nurgle's rot, transforming them into grotesque plague marines. Mortarion, tortured by the endless suffering, turned to Chaos, offering his legion and soul to Nurgle. Under the patronage of Nurgle, Mortarion was elevated to Daemon Prince and given his own world, which he twisted into a mockery of Barbarous. Still today, Mortarion's Death Guard unleashes their offensives through the Cadian Gate, surging into the vast expanse of the galaxy. Wherever their path leads, they propagate the euphoric contagions of Nurgle, gifting those who embrace an existence of eternal life with the most exquisite blessings from the Plague God. Mortarion, the irony lost on him, has turned into the very embodiment of the despotic overlords he once vowed to annihilate millennia ago. Seated upon a plague citadel atop a towering peak enveloped in toxic mists, he resembles the adoptive father he once despised in the annals of long-forgotten centuries.
He should kill himself. It'll give him... you'll be able to finish his storyline, because he never got to kill...
He never got to kill his father.
His father, yeah. And then the other guy stole it from him. So he should get into a fight with his real dad and then kill himself right before his real dad can take him. Yeah.
I got a quote to close this out here. Okay. So this is from Mortarion, Daemon Prince of Nurgle. "Forget no insult, my sons, as I have never forgotten those of my father, of the Emperor, nor those of Horus. Forgive no slight or grievance. Hold your bitterness deep within and let it fester there. Let it roil and squirm and churn until you are so filled with bile, so poisonous that all you touch falls to ruin. Thus shall you serve Nurgle best. Thus shall you spread his virulent gifts across the false Imperium and watch its final rotting."
He is Trenchcoat Kid. Just like, hold it in. Just get as bitter as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. If you guys want to hear more Warhammer 40k lore, hop on somewhere and friggin' let us know. Hop onto the Discord, let us know, send us an email, contact@loreboys.com, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with us however you can. Sorry if you've been trying to reach out to us on socials. None of us are really on socials, so other than Discord.
I checked the Twitter messages like twice a year. Month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But sometimes. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell your friends, leave us a review, all the usual stuff. Jimbo, anything you want to add for the listeners at home?
Just get in the Discord. It's growing all the time. We're putting a lot of work into it. There's an event tomorrow night. You guys will have missed it by the time this episode comes out, but there will be more events in the Discord. People just hanging out and chat and stuff. I think Forshi says he's got a 12-pack and a game of Zelda, and he's just going to hang out and chat for anyone who wants to come by. So Those are the types of things you can look forward to. If you're having issues with roles, please let me know. I kind of have like arbitrary rules that I've made up in my head to who gets promoted. And if you're looking for a promotion and I just don't see you talk, you won't get one. So just poke me if you need one. And yeah, Pete.
At Lorebros Podcast on Instagram. And that's about it for me. Yeah, I try to join voice chat. I've been very busy recently in my unemployment. I was talking to a buddy of mine. I'm like, I'm like the busiest bum you've ever met in your life, dude. he keeps trying to hang out with me. I've always got something going on. But yeah, I haven't been in voice chat for a while, but I'll definitely try and make an appearance in the event tomorrow and other ones in the future that you listening in the future could actually probably attend. But follow them links. You know, follow us on Instagram. We're like, I think I looked, we're like under 40 people away from 1,000 followers on Instagram. Oh. So if you want to drop a follow, that'd be tight as well.
New link to Loreboy. Oh, I better get this right.
Loreboys.
It's a subreddit. It's a subreddit, and I have three of them, but people started using one of them. So I really want to make sure that I have the right one before I. It's not that one. Yeah, so people have started posting on r/theloreboys. So if you want to get your mark on an early subreddit, we're kind of starting to grow. There's like not much there yet, but r/theloreboys. I'm going to try and start posting things like community events, episode uploads and stuff like that there, just so there's another route for people to find us.
Unlost Maniac post. I used to be ashamed of being Canadian until I listened to the Loreboys. Now I'm just ashamed of living in British Columbia. Might name my firstborn Eaton, or however it's spelled. Not like that. Hope me someone too. From the cast sees this. Man, get a look at these boys. Man, I love these guys. They've got me through some hard times with some great laughs. That's Red Shadow DX.
That's our mod, David.
That's David.
Yeah. Oh. But the other one, I think he was referring to Atune, which was our 20th episode, which was like Ethan's crazy actual past, and he was a god named Atune or something. Or
wow, it could be.
Remember when we wrote everybody a backstory?
And yeah.
Everybody write a backstory to the one to the left.
Painted turnips.
Yeah. Painted turnips to look like radishes or vice versa. Yeah, I don't remember. I got that stupid script somewhere.
If people are making quotes from episode 20, that's years ago at this point. So yeah, come check out r/theloreboys and make your mark, put a post in and get in there early.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening. If you guys want to support the show, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get access to the Loser Titles game. You'll get access to the episode art that we've been talking about on this episode. None of which was created by us in any way, shape, or form, but we just kind of share it for viewing purposes. You guys will get access to bonus content. We got, I don't know, probably like 5,000 hours of bonus audio at this point. Somewhere between 3 hours and 5,000.
It's just over a year of 30 minutes to 40 minutes each. So whatever that is. Yeah.
Whatever that is. Like 20 plus for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, 30 plus probably hours of bonus content. So patreon.com/loreboys if you want to check that out. And of course, for everyone who doesn't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime, which we've always offered. So there's been a lot of demand, especially since we got on Reddit, honestly, for some more adult, I guess, content from us, a little bluer content. So we are going to be jarring farts to sell, gamer girl fart jars. We're calling them Loreboys gamer girl fart jars. So, if you subscribe to Loreboys Prime, you will get the access to the pre-order of the deluxe fart editions of the Loreboys fart jars. So, Loreboys gamer girl fart jars, TM, as the McElroy brothers would say. If you don't trust Patreon and you want some fart jars, find Loreboys Prime at a Circuit City near you.
They're all just Tupperwares that Pete stored his boiled eggs in and he's done with.
I have an egg carton.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would constitute a Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.